Third case this morning is Alias Inc. versus Schroeder and Simplicity Consulting.
Morning. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes, please. Morning, Matthew Davis. The strangest thing to me about this whole affair is I have no idea why Judge Hill ruled the way she did. I've never seen her. I've never been in front of her. She's never seen me. I asked for oral argument 4 or 5 times. Never got it. She's never responded to a single argument that I made in a brief. She just signs his proposed orders. I have no idea why she did this. Now, a motion was brought asking for sanctions against me because of one reason. And that reason was when I amended the complaint to assert a claim for unjust enrichment, I did not assert that my client directly conferred the benefit on the defendant. And according to Mr. James, I have to prove that the plaintiff conferred a benefit. In fact, he said, since Young versus Young, Supreme Court decision, courts have consistently required the plaintiff to confer the alleged benefit on the defendant and have never said that it's enough for the benefit to be conferred at the plaintiff's defense. And sadly, Judge Becker, I have to inform you that you filed a frivolous opinion, or signed one, because you signed on to the case of Norcon Builders versus GMP Homes, decision by Judge Lau. That case was decided in 2011, 4 years after Young versus Young. And in that case, Judge Lau said, a claim of unjust enrichment requires proof of 3 elements. The defendant receives a benefit. The received benefit is at the plaintiff's expense, and so forth. So I've got Mr. James saying, hey, the courts have consistently said this. I've got a published Division I case saying just the opposite. Very strange. Now, they also cite the Supreme Court's 2013 opinion, in which the Supreme Court used the language plaintiff confers a benefit. What they don't mention is the fact that that was a 5-4 opinion. It was a 5-4 opinion, and Justice Wiggins dissented. And his dissent, he, joined by Justices James Johnson, Justice Madsen, and a pro tem justice whose name escapes me, all said that the standard is confers a benefit at the plaintiff's expense. This same argument was made to Judge Lasnik in federal court, and he called it dishonest. And yet, I'm accused of filing a frivolous action because I'm basing it on what the Supreme Court actually said. Now, if we look at Young versus Young itself, Young versus Young actually didn't adopt the standard that Mr. James says it did. They cite Bailey, which quotes Black's Law Dictionary, and then they say, in other words, it has to be at the plaintiff's expense. And if you look further down on that opinion where they actually apply the law to the facts of the case, they use that language again. The benefit was conferred at the plaintiff's expense. I just don't get this. Now, beyond that, there's the whole problem of the fact that he sought sanctions against my client under RCW 484-185. Now, there's only about 50 Washington reported cases saying that to bring a claim under 484-185, you have to show that the entire claim, every claim pled, is frivolous. The motion doesn't even mention the other 4 claims. Doesn't mention them at all. In my response, I say, hey, didn't mention him. And the court signs the order nonetheless. I file reconsideration. I point it out again. And we get revised findings from Judge Hill. And she's making findings now about the other four claims, about which not one single word has been briefed by anybody except me. We have a six-page motion that has a one-sentence request for CR 11 sanctions in the alternative. No explanation. She doesn't grant in the alternative. She grants it in the addition. We have a judge who grants CR 11 sanctions jointly and severally against an attorney and his client. It's pointed out to the judge, Judge, you cannot impose CR 11 sanctions against a client, only against an attorney. Pointed out on reconsideration. So a new order comes out on reconsideration, joint and several liability under CR 11. I can't explain this. What I can tell you is this. I take being a lawyer very seriously. I take the law very seriously. I do my research and claims. I can tell you that in Bailey, the benefit was not conferred directly. I can tell you that in Norcon, the benefit was not conferred directly. I have argued that and briefed that to the trial court, and I have begged and pleaded for oral argument or a hearing so that I could establish that, and I wasn't given it. This really needs to be fixed. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Jeff James. I'm here on behalf of Simplicity Consulting. This case is not about the abuse of discretion. It's about the abuse of the litigation process. The tools employed by Judge Hill in this case involved imposition of sanctions, a contempt order, and ultimately dismissal with prejudice. Judge Hill concluded, quote, the extraordinary sanction of dismissal was appropriate because of Elias and Davis' extreme discovery abuse and willful contempt of the court's orders. Those rulings are not part of this appeal. The only issue here is the post-dismissal ruling by Judge Hill to award sanctions. And that was the only tool that was available to her at that point, and is a tool available to this court to affirm, to send a clear message to litigants as to what is permissible and what is not permissible in litigation. My client did nothing wrong. They were an innocent bystander in this entire process. They found themselves in the crosshairs of a lawsuit between Elias and its former employee, Mr. Schroeder. By the way, Mrs. Schroeder was also sued in that lawsuit. My client had to pay $60,000 to extricate itself from a frivolous dispute. If Elias had simply dropped Simplicity from the case, as I urge repeatedly throughout the course of this litigation, we wouldn't be here. But in fact, they didn't. And after being abused and after having to defend itself, Judge Hill awarded sanctions and concluded in a detailed opinion with findings of fact that this was a frivolous lawsuit and that the conduct did violate CR 11. She did not abuse her discretion in doing so. And the standard of review for this court, as the court's well aware, for all of the factual findings, is abuse of discretion. Now, there's one issue that has been argued by Mr. Davis and Elias that does involve a de novo review, and that is her application of Young to the claim for unjust enrichment. We submit the language of Young says what it says. It uses language that says the plaintiff must confer a benefit. This court has used that same language in the Immunex case. Division 2 has used that same language in the Austin case. Judge Becker, lest you're concerned, you need not be, because in the Norcon Builders case, what this court said was, quote, the mere fact that a defendant has received a benefit from the plaintiff is insufficient alone to justify recovery. That's 161 Washington Appellate at 474 and 490. Regardless, it's a red herring argument, because there's three elements to an unjust enrichment claim. And there's no question that the other two were not met. Judge Hill found that the appellant had not conferred, or excuse me, that no benefit whatsoever had been conferred. I mean, I don't even know why we're talking about an unjust enrichment claim when there's no evidence of any benefit. Again, my client found itself in the crosshairs of a dispute between other parties, did not benefit in any way. There's no evidence that they benefited. Mr. Davis or Elias did not do any factual inquiry to find out if they'd benefited, yet they still pursued this claim. So where does it leave a litigant like my client? They are left at the mercy of the court. They are left at the mercy of the trial judge being able to apply RCW 4.84.185 or CR 11. That's what the court did in this case, and that order should be affirmed. If the court has any questions for me, I'd be pleased to address them.
Counsel takes issue with imposing CR 11 sanctions on his client.
Your Honor, my understanding of CR 11 is that it applies to an attorney or a party who signs a pleading that is not based on a good faith investigation of the facts. And in this case, Elias did sign the verified complaint. So Judge Hill was within her rights to also assert a violation of CR 11 against Elias.
He's asserted she never heard him out, never gave him an audience, chance to orally defend and assert that there was a factual basis and a proper legal basis for the claims.
Well, in fact, there was oral argument on the motion to dismiss. And in that oral argument, Mr. Davis and Elias were arguing that the dismissal should be without prejudice, and Simplicity argued dismissal should be with prejudice. I don't have a transcript of that argument, but I believe these issues were raised to Judge Hill, and it was within her discretion, based on the entire litigation, the conduct of the litigation, to determine whether or not to grant oral argument on a motion after that. But he was, in fact, heard, and his client was heard.
But not on the separate motion for CR 11 sanction. That was done on the pleading.
You're correct. Are there any other questions I can address? Thank you. We ask that the judgment and the order be affirmed.
Thank you.
He had 4 minutes left in which he could have explained to you how his motion satisfied 4.84.185's requirement that all claims be frivolous. Didn't mention it in his brief, didn't mention it in his court, didn't mention it anywhere. He's never argued that the other claims are frivolous. Now, he comes up and he talks about this as a sanctions order and a contempt order. You know what? Those orders no longer exist.
As long as you're here, why aren't they frivolous? What evidence was adduced to support them? And they were withdrawn without decision on the merits, so that we've got the unjust enrichment claim.
Well, okay, now hang on a sec. That is fully detailed in the brief. It's fully detailed in the briefing to the trial court below. The claim for...
I just thought you could talk about it.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to talk about it. With respect to the claim for tortious interference with contract, there is a Division III case that deals specifically with the notion of can an employer sue the employer of a new employee who employs someone under subject to a non-compete agreement for tortious interference with contract. And the court said, yes, they can. Now, in this particular case, Mr. James just got up and said, my client did nothing wrong. Well, apparently didn't read the deposition of his client, because in his client's deposition, she testified that, yes, we authorized Mr. Schroeder to go recruit a particular employee from Elias.
Wasn't that employee about to leave anyway? The contract was up?
Well, we don't know that. That's what she said. But on summary judgment, that's not a fact. See, this was, the answer is yes, that's what she said. Doesn't make it true. Now, the other thing is, even if she was, that doesn't mean what we lost was the ability to recruit her and keep her. More to the point, the contract prohibits him from soliciting. The fact that she authorized him to solicit is what matters.
Doesn't establish that there was a loss or that it violated her non-compete or non-disclosure or...
And if we were talking about summary judgment, or if we were talking about trial, or if we were talking about the actual merits of the case, those would be valid points. But we're not. We're talking about whether a claim is frivolous.
Is there prima facie evidence to support the elements of the claim as pled?
The standard is not prima facie evidence. The standard is a good faith belief.
What's the basis of the good faith belief? What's your client's evidence?
How many cases are there that say it doesn't matter if you lose the case? It doesn't matter if the case is not strong. It doesn't matter if the case loses. That's not the standard here.
I'm not debating that. I'm just asking.
Well, but what I'm saying is that you're heading down the wrong path. And what I don't understand is this. Okay, Mr. James just gets up here and he says, well, on unjust enrichment, I don't know why he's talking about the conferring of benefit element, because there's three elements and the others haven't been proven. You know what? He filed a motion. The motion mentions one element, makes one argument. And my frustration here is this. He files a six-page motion making one argument, which is about unjust enrichment, and he makes a dead wrong, absolutely unequivocally wrong argument about the element. He makes an argument that was rejected by he's even wrong about what Young versus Young says. It's not even a close question. I don't understand this. If Young versus Young, the court in Young versus Young gave a holding as to what it means. And the holding is a benefit conferred at the plaintiff's expense. There is an ample record here to prove that. If this court has a problem with that, I'm just utterly baffled. And I would ask the court to revisit the record. Thank you.
Thank you.